Your attention, please. It's the bottom of the fifth, brought to you by Heritage Distilling Company.
What do you do when you reach the bottom of the fifth? Open a new bottle of award-winning BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon. We work hard to fill our BSB full of smooth sweetness, so you can enjoy every last drop. Just make sure you have a spare on deck. When it's the bottom of the fifth, the glasses are loaded. You can't spell baseball without BSB. Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of the bottom of the fifth and your Seattle Mariners.
Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a couple of Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson and Rob Ensley on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Evinrude and BRP ATVs, The Everett Clinic, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Costa Rica's CrocodileBay.com. It's The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.
We're going to hour two of The Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. That's John Martinez, Julie Sear to my right, Ashley Cox behind the glass. I'm Tom Nelson, and on the phone, my old buddy Rob Ensley, marooned, I say, in Craig, Alaska, for 100 days, his exile in SEAK. Good morning, Robbo. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. I'm standing here pulling a braided line off a Saltus 40 reel.
Nice.
Nice. Sit down the dock, retooling here. We're fixing everything that's broken the last few days.
So you have been breaking some stuff because I saw that picture of Lingosaurus.
What a beast. Yeah.
How big was that? How much did that ling cod weigh?
I don't know. We never weigh them, but it was 44 and a half inches long. And I don't know. I don't know, 35, 40 pounds. I don't know. It was a beast. It was a good one. Yeah. And we can keep them up to 45 inches.
Wow.
So it just made the slot.
All right, Julie was going to say something, but she didn't have her button pushed. We've been pushing Julie's buttons, but she has not been pushing.
Okay. How you doing, Julie? How you doing?
Hey, good morning. Yeah, good morning, Rob. You know, I saw that, and the first thing I thought was tacos. I love wing cod tacos.
I know, right? A lot of fish tacos there, a lot of beer battered fish and chips. Ugh. I mean, whatever you want to do with that. And ling cod is my favorite by far. I just love eating ling cod.
Yeah, ling cod roll-ups are so good. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm going to have that tomorrow for dinner.
That sounds good.
And fresh ling. Fresh ling on a barbecue, ling,
awesome.
Tempura. Yeah, I'm in. So
yeah. So Pete had a little quill back. Well, we think it was a quill back. I don't know. He said some little cellar dweller on there, and we're in 300. I don't know. There's pretty deep water, you know. And like, oh, we want to get that thing up here and release it. And about halfway up, like, I think company
hitchhiker. Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then the quillback was gone, and he was just hooked. Somehow he got a hold of all the hooks, and we were lucky to get him in. Because a lot of times they spit those bottom fish out. You know, they get to the boat, you gotta get him in right now before they spit that critter out. But that guy got hooked, and we were lucky enough to get him in. So
yeah,
that was a fun one for sure.
So what's going on in salmon land up there? You were a little concerned earlier in the season when you and I talked about mm-hmm. how things are going to progress. Tell us what's going on.
It's still the same. I mean, we're still working our tails off out there. The silvers are coming in kind of like the kings. They're maybe a little better than the kings, but they're kind of coming in fits and starts. And, you know, you got two options. You can sit and, you know, we call it stick and stay and make them pay and just sit there for 3-4 hours and pick away at them. Or you can take off running looking for the glory bite. And I've been, you know, the last couple of days, two of the 3 days I sat on them and just kind of picked away at them and made it work. Yesterday, I got frustrated after about an hour, and we took off running. One of my other boats and I took off running, and we ran all day. Then finally went back to the same place we started and started picking on them again. So it's weird, man. It's not, you can't really count on anything. You know, they show up one day over here, and they're there. I mean, gosh, you go and you just wail on them. You go back the next day, and it's like, huh, okay, where'd they go? They're not here.
Yeah, so, that's the same story, man, that I saw, you know.
We got enough boats. We were scattering all over the place. We got enough boats in our fleet that we run with. We scatter all over, and it doesn't take us too long to find them again. But the summer has definitely been just—I would say it's just been weird. They're coming. They actually just this last week it started building up pretty good out there. But it's just been a goofy summer. I've only really seen one other one like this. Back in 2008 was the last one.
Yeah, I agree, dude. And, yeah, 2008 was fits and starts and tough. And, hey, okay, we get four. Yeah. Okay, great. And then you come back next day, two or one. But that's a great plan is go get that white meat, get that knocked out, get it out of the way, and then go find some Chinook. Now, have the coho started to show at all yet, Robbo?
Well, that's what I was talking about.
Oh, total. Okay. I'm sorry. Total. I thought you were talking about Chinook. Okay, gotcha. Right, I apologize.
You're too busy looking at Julie. Quit looking at Julie. And
I'm trying not to look at Ashley behind the curtain and then not look at Julie. Okay, but I can.
Ashley, it's sensory overload.
I know. It's and the studio
blonde hair
and the studio doesn't. It smells different today too. There's kind of a sweetness to the air, whereas with John and I, it's we smell like Procure. Most of the time.
No, that's you and Rob, not you and I.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
So, well, speaking of different smells, you've had some prawn gear on board the boat, and you're experiencing some of those Southeast Alaska prawns as well.
No, yeah, it was awesome, man. We dropped the pods. Gosh, that was the first week of July. I think we dropped about 400 feet of water, and they got some nice prawns, thick fatties. And sent them home with the folks, got a couple silvers and whatnot. And it was pretty fun, and I got to use those new SMI pots.
Yeah, those Bomac pots are
pretty
amazing,
slick.
Dude. Yeah,
yeah, no, they're sweet, man. So that was why we only dropped them one day. Got some things figured out, really, with them. But yeah, I plan on doing that. I got some buddies coming up the first week of September to do a little deer hunting, and I think we're going to deer hunt and put the prawn traps out and just kind of do a one-stop shopping kind of thing there. So, yeah.
Hey, Rob, Bob and I who owns SMI, we tested those Alaskan shrimp pots. In the entrance on those Alaska shrimp pots are probably 10% of the Puget Sound type shrimp spot shrimp pots. You know what I noticed? They got the same amount of shrimp in them that the Puget Sound style pots did with a wider opener. You know what that leads me to believe? I think a lot of those shrimp are just going through the 7/8 mesh in those pots. I think a lot of them aren't going through those entrances because there was a little bit of difference, but I'm telling you what, not enough to, when Bob first said, well, we're going to bring these pots, I said, well, I don't know about this. I don't like this. It looked like the making of a really long day on the water, but gosh, there was almost no difference at all. It made me rethink shrimp and how they get in the pot, because I don't think they're going. I think half of them are not going through the entrances.
They're just going through the mesh. I agree. And, we only had one pull. We set them down and then we went fishing all day and came back and got them. If we would have sat on them we do in the
soak
sound,
them, yeah,
pull them every 45 minutes, it would have been just crazy. But it was fun. I figured out though, you kind of need to run the harness with make land level. We had one that landed on its top, kind of on its side. So then we had a couple harnesses. We had four pots, and I think I had two harnesses. So if you get those things, get the harnesses.
Or tie a bridle. I'm going to blog that up.
Yeah, or get a bridle, some kind of bridle. Yeah. And then definitely some hanging bait in there. We had a mesh tube full of a carcass in it. And then we also had a mesh tube full of pellets. We had both in there. And I should have just hung a big halibut carcass or something in there. We would have just, But regardless, we learned some stuff. It was a lot of fun. I ran that quarter-inch line, John, that you recommended. And, boy, it all worked really good.
Yeah, so keep taking some pictures. My shrimping PowerPoint at the Seattle Boat Show is getting better by the day, no question about it. So what's next, buddy? What's the plan today? Is this turnaround day or are you fishing?
No, we're turnover day here. Just down at the dock early, fixing everything and restringing, reels, and I got to do some boat work. And then, we got 16 people going out this morning and 17 more smiling faces showing up here this afternoon. So,
you had Julie at September blacktail hunting.
I started doing the happy dance over here.
She lit up like a light bulb.
I was dancing. I know you can picture that.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. I tell you what, it's just been gorgeous here lately, and I sit out on the boat and I just look at the alpine all day. I just look up there like, how can I get up? What's this ridge? I go over there, I can get up to that one right there, and I probably camp right there. I'm just constantly scheming on ways to get up there every day when we're out fishing by these big mountaintops, so definitely look forward to it.
All right, buddy. Well, stay safe up there and keep in touch, and keep up the good work, my friend.
Awesome, you guys. Have yourself a great morning, and I'm going to get back to work here. Thank you
all right,
so
Rob.
Much.
I'll talk to you soon, brother. You take care of yourself.
Bye, Rob. Bye.
All right. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The makers of award-winning BSB, Brown Sugar Bourbon, understand that you don't have to love baseball to experience the bottom of the fifth. With the smooth, sweet taste of BSB, the bottom comes quick. So be prepared. When you reach the bottom of the fifth, make sure you have a new bottle of BSB on deck. Pick yours up at your nearest retailer. Like the Hall of Famer once said, it's a great day to buy two. You can't spell baseball without BSB. Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of the bottom of the fifth, and your Seattle Mariners.
The Northwest Outdoor Report, also known as Redneck Sports Center, is brought to you by Truck Vault, the leader in secure vehicle storage.
Marine Area 9 Chinook quota update. The Area 9 or Admiralty Inlet Hatchery Chinook opener was at its enigmatic best this week with hot spots and slow spots. But according to WVFW catch estimates, anglers are about to become victims of their own success. After 4 days of fishing, WDFW estimated we're at 53% of the catch quota in Area 9. Given that the department assumes catch rates for the fishery did not really drop that significantly, WDFW has made the decision to shut down Area 9 after Sunday and reevaluate where we are with a quota. If after the weekend's angling efforts, there's enough of the 5,600 hatchery Chinook remaining for a reopener, WDFW will make that announcement sometime next week or on WDFW.WA.gov. Areas 7 and 10 will remain open for Chinook angling.
Warm water kills kokanee released into Lake Stevens. Thousands of dead fish washed up on the shores of Lake Stevens, and now the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife has taken the heat. Every year, the Department of Fish and Wildlife ensures that the Lake Stevens kokanee fishery remains productive by stocking it on a cool spring day with more than 150,000 kokanee. This year, the stocking took place on a 90-degree summer day when oxygen levels were at their lowest and thousands of the fish were dead, washing up on the shores of the lake. Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife said the spring planting was in the plans, but there was a logistical conflict. I guess so. Department of Fish and Wildlife said it believes that around 10,000 fish were lost, and the department wants to make it right. It will stock the lake again this fall with another 160,000 kokanee.
Olson's Resort at CQ Report. According to Brandon Mason of Olson's-Resort.com, boats have regularly started to come in with limits, but the king bite is a bit different this season. Instead of nearshore action, anglers are finding their fish suspended over deep water 200 to 400 feet deep, running 80 to 120 feet of wire on their downriggers. Silver Horde Green Ace High Flies and Kingfisher Spoons and Herringade and Irish Cream Spoons up to size 4.0 are the ticket. Troll speeds faster than normal, which is why the shorter leaders behind the flashers. Herring and krill have been thick at CQ, and early coho and CQ are hitting red and green label herring, trolled fast and shallow. The morning tide change has been best, and try to hit Olson's Resort during the week if you can.
Ocean salmon update. Starting in Marine Area 1, Ilwaco, catch rates are up over a fish per rod for coho and about 1.2 fish per angler for all salmon species. The quota for both Chinook and coho are safe at 10% down in Ilwaco. John Kaiser, who joins us a little later in the show, reports that Westport Marine Area 2 has hit a bit of a lull with about a 25% success rate for salmon, but with the tuna starting to show in solid numbers at a reachable 34 to 40 miles offshore, some anglers will be icing up their boats and making the run for albacore. Nia Bay checks in with a solid 3/4 of a fish per rod, with coho making up the bulk of the catch. On a coast-wide basis, the Chinook and coho quotas are hovering around that 11% mark, so from here, it looks like a nice full season out on Washington's coast.
Baker Lake sockeye update. Interesting, half as many fish, twice as good of fishing as last year. Figure that one out. Spectacular Baker Lake has been really hitting its stride as of Friday. Farm Fish and Wildlife counted over 12,000 fish into the Baker Lake trap and has transferred nearly 6,000 sockeye into Baker Lake. At first light, try the 25-foot depth and then down to 35-foot once the sun hits the water. Tactics, a slow troll with lure Jensen, herring dodger, and a 10-inch leader with a red or pink micro squid rigged on a pair of 2-watt Gamakatsu hooks tipped with cured cocktail shrimp. Keep the dodger within 15 feet of your release to control the depth and ensure solid hookups. Try the Noisy Creek area first thing in the morning and then back to the Swift Creek side. When things get a little slow, try trolling in a big circle at the lower end of the lake. Since Spartan Fish and Wildlife is releasing sockeye at the dam on some days and at Swift Creek on others, keep an eye on both locations. Baker Lake is open through September 7th with a 3-fish daily limit.
Keep crab pots out of ferry lanes. Harvesting crab is a Northwest tradition, but improperly set and lost crab pots can mean big trouble for the region's ferry system. That's why the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and Washington State Ferries are joining forces this summer to urge recreational crab fishers to stay out of ferry lanes, docks, and terminals when dropping crab pots. Several million people are expected to ride a ferry during the busy summer travel season. In 2017, three separate ferries on three different routes were temporarily disabled due to crab lines and pots either placed in the ferry lane or improperly set and swept into the routes. Recreational crab lines tangled in the shafts of the vessels led to both costly repairs and lengthy delays for ferry travelers. We need crabbers to help prevent conflicts with ferries as they hit the water this year, said Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife Police Captain Dan Chadwick. Chadwick recommended several ways for crab fishers to have a successful experience and avoid problems with ferries. Remember to add weight to lines, know your water depth, add extra weight to crab pots, use cotton raw escape cord, and properly label and identify your crab pots. Remember, anyone can drop crab pots. What you want is to safely retrieve your pots loaded with crab.
This Redneck Sports Center has been brought to you by the great folks at Truck Vault in Cedro Woolley. Check out your next secure vehicle storage system at truckvault.com.
Actually, I had Don Torsett from Truck Vault on the boat yesterday, and had a great day with, you know, on both the crabbing front and the Chinook front as well. And I tell you what, man, if you find the right spot, you will find some crab this year. But again, just like Julie said, anybody can go throw crab gear. You want to get it back with some crab in it. You don't want to leave your pots derelict. You don't want to put your pots in either, you know, marine shipping lanes, obviously, or our ferry route. So, you know, you get to stay away from the Mukilteo area, right, and on that edge, you know, try to keep a half mile buffer. If you're over on the Clinton side, same thing, Edmonds, Kingston, you know, just watch that stuff. Because again, it's a lose-lose situation. If a ferry comes across your gear, wads up your crab pot, you know, delays a lot of folks that are just trying to get about their normal day. And you don't get your crab gear back. So nobody wins in that scenario.
You know, the escape rings and the crab pots is an important regulation, Tom. I think an equally good regulation would be that the pots need to be 15 or 20 pounds.
I agree.
I think that has to come down the pike because, number one, you're going to catch more crab, and we're going to have less crab gear just out floating around Puget Sound, which is not good.
No, I agree. And WDFW does a great job watching that stuff. I can personally attest to that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. We're going to pop out of here for a quick break. Our old friend Ashley Nicole Lewis with some coastal salmon information coming at you next. You're on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
A special opportunity from Heritage Distilling Company. The most awarded craft distillery in North America for the fifth year in a row is growing so fast, we thought the timing is perfect to give you a chance to join our family and invest in our company.
This is not an offer to sell or a solicitation to buy any securities here or in any jurisdiction where such an offer is unlawful. Any private placement of the company's common stock can only be sold to accredited investors under federal law.
The time is now for a very limited time. Log on to heritagedistilling.com/investors.
From the rapid rivers of the Pacific Northwest to your radio, this is the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a full house here in the studio today. Of course, John Martinez jumping in. Julie Sear jumps in. Ashley Cox behind the board. And now we're Ashley Squared with Ashley Nicole Lewis jumping in. All right, Ashley, we're stalking you online, and you appear to be going fishing this morning. All right, so
I am Riverside right now, my friends, on the lower Quinault River.
Oh, okay. All right.
Ashley, it's Julie here. I'm the one stalking you. Yeah. I'm giving live intel.
Just to be clear. So what's going on in the lower Quinault before we start talking about the salt chuck? What's up? What are you doing?
Yeah, so it's really exciting time to be on the peninsula right now because a lot of these summer runs are pushing in. So we're chasing summer steelhead on the lower Quinault. Our friend, Mike V, has been sharing that there's a handful of summer runs on the lower and on the bogey, on the hoe. He wanted me to mention to be careful if you're floating that upper river down to Oxbow. There's a couple sketchy parts in there with the rivers being low, but I mean, the water's a little bit warm, but there's certainly summer runs around. I mean, we've hooked into a few already this morning, handful of little fish, but yeah, so far so good.
Are you a booting or are you a boating?
You know, I wanted to boat, but when the weather's good and you can, you know, wear a t-shirt and hike along the riverside, in Washington State. Why not?
Yeah, no kidding. So are you floating jig and targeting riffles? What's the game plan today, Ash?
You know, when it starts getting really low and clear like it is now, I really like my go-to is a little sand shrimp tail and a little Jensen egg just at the tip of it. And so we're using like a fluorocarbon line. We're trying to be stealthy, ninja-like. We're going to sneak into this water. We're drifting some of those sand shrimp tails down. We're also tossing like little size like 3, size 4 spinners in like greens and purples. And we're getting a little bit of response to that. But, man, it's hard to beat that sand shrimp tail.
So are you using long rods and spinning reels with light line? Give us a little bit more of the technique involved besides what's on the end of the line, Ashley.
Yeah, for sure. And we're using like a 9.5, 10-foot rod. And the reason why is because we're trying to stay off of where we think these fish are. So a longer rod is going to help us pitch those spinners out and toss that line out there as well. So, yeah, a little bit of a longer rod. We're using like 6 to 12. We're using like clear floats as well. Just anything that we can to be stealthy, stay off of where we think these fish are, and sneak down to them without being noticed. So,
Ashley, Julie here. Are you center pinning out there too?
You know, I didn't bring the center pin, and I love center pinning. It's one of my personal go-tos. But when you are making a lot of those really long pitches, sometimes the center pin can be fun, and sometimes it can be a little bit much. And I have a couple friends with me out here on the lower river. So center pin is something that I certainly wouldn't rule out, especially the summer runs really react well to some small beads like size 10, size 8, size 10 beads. So generally, but not today.
Julie.
No, that's Ashley.
Ashley.
That's Julie. That's Ashley.
Well, you didn't know who I was talking to.
That's true.
I'm talking.
But generally, you don't interview somebody that's in the studio.
But I've been admonished by the. Okay, ladies.
Yeah.
Okay, ladies. You two are purists to a certain degree compared to Tommy.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of a relative term. We're out there using 15 and 18 pound downrigger balls, and you guys are talking about fly fish and center pins and all this stuff. And I admire that. I really do. So, Ashley, I think being a woman river guide is really an accomplishment. And I've got to talk to you at a wedding here a month ago, and you know, you are quite the accomplished angler. So if somebody wants to go fishing with you, tell us how they can get in contact with you.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate that. It was really great to meet you too this summer. They can get in touch with me by going to my website, badashfishing.com, and you can book, you can learn a little bit about me, you can get in touch with me through that. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Badash Outdoors, Badash Fishing. Anyone can get in touch with me there. If you have any questions about fishing, hit me up. If you'd like to go fishing, I'd love to take you. I have a handful of what to do with your fish after we catch it kind of stuff, cooking, whatnot, all of that online. So check it out, and hopefully we can all go fishing sometime soon, eh, John?
Hey, you know, I want to give you a compliment. A lot of my customers at my store have fished with you, and I really, really get high marks about, or you do, about the fishing that you've provided to these people. So, you know, not just because we have you on the radio today or because I've met you, is I've heard that you are an excellent angler. So, anybody who wants to enjoy the Olympic Peninsula, especially in some of the just beautiful areas that you get to fish.
Somebody hooked up behind you. Sorry. I hated to interrupt your compliment. I heard that. All right, what's going on?
We want to see the life.
Radio fish, let's have it. How big is it?
I mean, okay, I really want to say that there's a massive fish on, but my boyfriend's just yelling at my dog.
Come on. You could have totally gone with that. That's okay. That's all right. Yep. All right. So,
the biggest summer silhouette I've ever found. Naughty dog.
No. Yeah, there we go. Perfect. The dog's in the water. That'll spook the hole. All right. So what's going on out on the coast? Because, you know, this is coastal salmon season, and from Nea Bay down to Ilwaco, people are having varying success out there. So what are you hearing from your beloved coastal area there, Ash? Excuse me. Yeah,
definitely. So I heard from a handful of folks out of Nea Bay, out of CQ, that it's just been really hot out there, like some boats limiting in an hour and a half, and they're using pro trolls on downriggers and having a blast up there. A little bit further south out of Westport, had a handful of friends do some tuna fishing about 2 weeks ago, and they were getting into them about 60 miles off the coast. And then I have a friend going out. You know, the last couple of days it's been tough because it's been really windy out there. A lot of trips have been canceled. But the fish are certainly headed in. I mean, the sea surface temperature and chlorophyll imagery are really lining up, so there could be some really good fishing coming in when the weather calms down. So
that's
a lot of opportunity at the Westport.
Yeah, it lines up pretty good with what I'm hearing. I got a couple of buddies that are making a run tomorrow, Tobek and John Kaiser, who's going to join us a little later in the show. And they've got some numbers that are between 34 and 40 miles out of Westport, and they got a good temperature break right there. And it sure sounds like El Waco has been outproducing Westport. We'll get on the salmon front, but we'll hear more about that later. Ashley Nicole Lewis, Bad Ash Fishing. We appreciate your time this morning. Get that doggone Labrador out of your fishing hole. Yeah, you got to keep the dog out of the water.
All right, I'll go chase the fishing.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So say hi to Callie for us too, Ash.
Will do. Thanks, you guys.
All right, kid. Talk to you soon. Take care. All right. Coming up next, Jet Chevrolet Picks of the Week for the third week of July already.
Boy, it's counting down.
Man.
But we still have a lot of Chinook fishing ahead of us.
A lot of fishing ahead of us.
A lot of time on the water between you and I.
And we're going to run it all down for you next. Jet Chevrolet Picks of the Week coming up next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Play ball!
This baseball season, Heritage Distilling Company proudly sponsors the bottom of the fifth. It's kind of like the seventh inning stretch. You stand up, stretch your legs, then head over for a new bottle of BSB, brown sugar bourbon. Because when you reach the bottom of the fifth, you need to be ready with a new bottle of BSB on deck. It's the seventh inning stretch with a smooth, sweet kick to it. You can't spell baseball without BSB. Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of the bottom of the fifth and your Seattle Mariners.
Take them.
The Outdoor Line Picks of the Week are brought to you by Jet Chevrolet and Federal Way. Nobody beats a jet deal. Nobody.
It's the red, white, and new sale at Jet Chevrolet. Save big on remaining new 2017 models in stock. Jet Chevrolet and JetChevrolet.com. All right. Julie Sear, our little probiotic, prebiotic pixie.
Little blonde girl.
What do you got? What do you got? What do you got for, what's your pick? Where are you sending people? You've been spending a little bit of time on the beach, flipping some clouser minnows off Fort Flagler State Park.
Flagler.
So you're finding resident co-host Marine Area 9.
Yeah.
So run that drill down for us.
Oh, we're going back to this again. So yeah, 8-weight rod. You want to make sure you've got that out there. A reel with steel drag. You know, use that like coastal quick shooter by Rio. Great line. It'll get your flies out there and cut through the wind. So nice strip, walking pace water. Those things are going to run around you.
So are you, is this a tide change deal? Is this a high tide program? When do you need to be out there?
You know, you can always say that it's going to be a specific tide, but I find fish almost every tide.
No kidding. That's interesting.
It's funny that you said that because I've been being asked that all week. Just get out there in the morning.
Just get your fly in the water and leave it there.
Fish till 1 p.m. Yep. And you'll have your fish.
And we get so many texts, 710-710, powered by Everett Outboards, with regard to bank fishing salmon opportunities out in the salt. And you know, that's a great solution to a nice problem to have. We've also, John, seen a whole bunch of people fishing the bank at Point No Point and catching a few fish there too.
Yeah, they're casting buzz bombs and Point Wilson darts off the beach right there. And in the first week of August, a lot of these fish that you and I have been encountering, Tom, they're going to be moving down to the Edmonds area. In fact, it's probably the first part of that. And the Edmonds fishing pier is going to get quite good. So be prepared for that, and that's right by the Edmonds Ferry. You can just drive down there, park there, and walk out to the dock, and you can cast off the dock. And actually, it's a really good fishery. But in the meantime, you better make it up to Baker Lake, because the last two or three days, from the guys I've talked to, they've been doing really, really... Now, Tom, explain that on half as many fish. You explain that to me.
So, and you know this yourself, John. There may not be half as many fish coming in, but a larger percentage of them have made it to the trap, and so more fish have been transferred to the lake at this time than were there last year. So overall, the run size has been greater. The commercial harvest down in the estuary has been backed off to make sure there's more reach in the trap. More fish in the trap means they can transfer more fish up to the
fresher fish are getting there earlier.
Bingo. Okay. And so now you couple that with maybe a degree or two warmer water temperature up in Baker Lake, keeps them a little more active right now. To me, the explanation of the excellent fishing in Baker Lake right now is purely a numbers game. I mean, you're talking about a solid number of fish and a steady stream of them coming in, and guys are getting it figured out. There's a learning curve to every single one of these fisheries. I mean, keep in mind, this is the 10th year of our opportunity in Admiralty Inlet again with regard to Hatchery Chinook, which started in 2008. The fishery in Baker Lake, you know, had kind of got rebooted in a shorter time frame than that. And so, the more years guys are putting in, the better they're getting. So I think it's a combination of more fishing coming in Baker Lake and better fishermen on that fishery as well, John.
Yeah, you know, I've noticed that too, Tom. People are discovering new gear. I'm starting to sell things I never even thought of selling before, you know, new things. Hey, Tom, I got another tip here. You know, crabbing hasn't been like stellar everywhere, but it's been stellar in some locations.
Yes, it has.
And I'm going to steer people to re-diverting their efforts. And what I would do is I'd go up into Saratoga Passage. It doesn't really matter if you're on the shores of Kameno Island or you're up by Langley on the shorelines of Whidbey Island. Saratoga Passage has been outstanding crabbing.
That hurts me a little bit because, yeah, you're right. And I've been sneaking some gear up that neck of the woods too.
Stay out of there.
You know, well, you're the one that started talking about it, man. So, and I'll further dial you in a little bit farther.
The reason why Area 9's closing is because of you and I.
You're gonna
get crabbing closed.
No, I'm not. No, don't worry about that. But here's the deal: the Skagit Bay area from Utsalati on North has been phenomenal. And, you know, that Skagit River estuary is a vast area. The South Fork dumps in, the North Fork's dumping in, all the way up at Goat Island and past Strawberry Point and all that stuff. And so it's been tremendous crabbing. And you don't need to crab as deep up in the Skagit Bay area, too. Just look at the edge of that drop-off right there, and you're going to do just fine. As far as baits go, if you've been out catching a few salmon, it's really hard to beat a fresh salmon carcass. Make sure you But armor your bait. Don't just bait pin it and stick it in there. Right now, I'm using bait bags inside of cages.
That's what I've been doing also.
So when you clean your salmon, you've got a heavy duty mesh, you know, bait bag. You got them at your store. Lauren's got them at Harbor Marine on the Everett waterfront right there. You can go jump in there. The Outdoor Emporium, Sport Crow have them as well. So you go bag your bait. Then I'll put it in an SMI BOMAC bait cage that I have zip tied to the bottom of the pot. So now think about this. Pity the poor crab that has to reach in past the cage, then get in the bag. Hey,
torture, Tom.
Dude,
pure torture.
I know,
but
it's torture to crack the crab and get it out of the shell.
Why should they have, in front of your house?
Why should they have any less struggle getting crab meat, you know, getting their meat, if I got to crack the crab and pick it out of their shell? I'm going to make them pick it out of a crab.
And the point is, Tom, you do long soaks on your crab pots, and I've been doing longer soaks too. And what you have to do on longer soaks, remember, you're getting large male Dungeness crab in there, you're getting female crabs, you're getting sub-legal males in there. And if you have salmon in there, it attracts the world into your pot.
It absolutely does.
And so they eat your bait fairly rapidly. It's easy for them to eat salmon. So the more you cage it up and the more you put it in these bait bags, you got to remember, you got to get past the first hour of bait because they're going to start to leave even the best of the best pots if they have nothing to eat. And the way that you and I are rigging our pots with our bait in those bait bags, they're heavy-duty nylon bags with a drawstring at the top, is they can't get to the meat of, and they'll stay in there. They're not going to leave because there's nothing better than a salmon meal.
And so another thing I'll do is our friends from Raised Baits, Joey Piber and Ryan Lampers, they have these crab bait blocks.
Yes.
And it is food grade herring, anchovy. You know, I'm sure there's some other, you know, there could even be some squid and octopus jumped in there. I don't know. But I tell you what, all the stuff that isn't good enough to package, and Raised Baits does a great job. They make these crab bait blocks, which is absolute great food for these things. And the little ground, I mean, there'll be just a kind of a piece or two just kind of popping out of there, and it flushes out, and the crabs just come running. It's
like all you can eat buffet for.
I made meatloaf out of it. My family didn't know the difference.
That would be fish loaf. That would be bait loaf. But you know yourself. I mean, so many people think, oh, you need some stinky freezer burnt.
No.
That is a relic concept from somebody that's catfishing or carp fishing or something like that, and it really doesn't matter. No, the best, and this, it goes the same for halibut and salmon and bottom fish. the freshest, nicest food grade bait you can possibly get to put in that crab gear.
Well, and think about it. You are what you eat to the macular of your eye and what your food eats. So what do you want to be putting out there?
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, you could even extrapolate that to shrimp fishing as well. And when that season rolls around again, we kind of found some new information out with regard to that fishery. But the advantage to fishing these bait blocks is that you have a constant stream of this bait going out there that's just bite-sized chunks for the crab. They can't really get to it and destroy the block, but you need to fish these things frozen. Mm-hmm. And that's my favorite way on a long soak to deploy crab gear. And here's why. The first, you know, it thaws fairly quickly, yeah, but the first little bit, the first crabs to get to it are not going to destroy your bait.
No.
Because, again, it's frozen harder than a rock, so it's difficult for them to dismantle that bait, and it keeps fishing longer into the soak, John.
Yeah, and you want that stream of nutrients going into the water, the things that attract crab immediately. Now, remember, we've made this point on this program many, many, many times. You're competing with all kinds of crab pots in your area, so you want your bait to be the freshest, and you want this stream of oils and fish and nutrients go out in the water. And it's just, you know, I always use the analogy. It's like calling ducks with a duck call. You know,
That's a great point.
Only you're using bait, and it brings them over to your pot. And then once they get in there, the hanging bait that we're using in these bait bags keeps them interested once they get in there, so they don't leave once they get in there, because you don't want a 7-inch Dungeness crab leaving your pot.
No, right. And I tell you what, there has been some.
Boy, they're huge.
Purple back, 7.5, 8 inches. I mean, we were measuring some yesterday, and it was like, why even measure these things? They're bigger than the caliper.
The last time I crabbed, Tom, I had 12 Dungeness crab. Some I had to put overboard, but I only measured one out of 12.
Yeah, and so the concept you're alluding to with regard to the bait is that of a broadcast bait and a hanging bait, and I tend to view those raised bait blocks as just that, a broadcast bait. Mm-hmm. And then the salmon carcass is something that will keep them in the pot because they got something to feed on. Mm-hmm. As far as depth in 710 powered by Everett Outboards from the 425, what depths are you guys crabbing at? And that's, you know, I keep a lot of line on my pots, and so even though I'm fishing 150-foot lines, I will still fish that 40 to 125. Okay.
I crab in a little different area you do. A lot of the areas that you crab on Mission is better, deeper. I've been crabbing down my picnic point, and I've been using, you know, interesting down there, if you get beyond 60, you hardly catch anything.
Yeah.
You know, where there's other places in Puget Sound where you can crab quite deep, especially where the gradient is real steep.
Are you, do you tend, if you find some rock crab in with your Dungeness, are you dropping your pots in the same spot again, or are you kind of moving them around?
Well, here's what I've noticed.
I'm trying to avoid rock crabs. I don't keep them. I'm kind of a Dungeness guy.
If you're catching a lot of rock crab, you normally don't catch more Dungeness crabs. So what I've noticed is when I put my crab pots out, let's say you're putting them out one every, let's call it a block.
Sure.
Every 600 yards maybe. And so the pots that have two or three rock crab in them don't have very many Dungeness. Now, I don't know if the red rocks are so feisty that the Dungeness don't. I don't blame them. I wouldn't want to get in that. I wouldn't want to be locked up with one of those things in there.
I'm pretty sure they don't agree on a whole lot.
No. Yeah. But they occupy different spaces on the earth. There's a reason why they call them rock crabs. They like to be around rock.
Ecological niche.
Yeah, you know, where your Dungeness crab like to be around eelgrass, soft sandy bottoms.
Yep.
And, you know, they like to travel quite a bit because they're out foraging for food. Just totally two different animals.
Yeah, I completely agree. I tell you what, so give me a quick Dungeness crab recipe for tonight. If you're cooking them whole, you're going to clean them up. What are you going to do with them, Julie?
Yeah, you know, so I really liked that tarragon vinaigrette that I made when I talked to you guys about it.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, because I really love food when it's fresh in season, right? Yeah, I don't like to do too much to it. So I literally just made this olive oil, lime juice, garlic, shallot, tarragon, and you just whisk it up, and you can just dip your fresh crab in it. Or, you know, if you want to be healthy and throw a salad in there too, put some lettuce. But I mean, come on, that's just how I eat it, is fresh like that. Or even a lemon aioli, garlic lemon aioli, if you like the creamier stuff. So
I like putting the crab on a salad. You know, I kind of eat it half just out of the shell, half on a salad. You know, I like it both ways. You know, with vinaigrette on the salad is
really good. I can't not crack it and hit it with just a little tiny bit of garlic butter. I'm sorry, I can't.
You're good. Yeah.
Oh. hot right out of the steam. Okay. A little garlic butter on a crab with some hot smoked salmon coming out of the smoker, and then a Corona that somebody stuffed a lime down into.
That's the best part.
That's not a bad part on a, and you know, and that's why, you know, again, we are so fortunate to live where we live, and we can get this fresh stuff, and that's why, you know, I just really want to encourage people to don't spend your July just hanging out by the air conditioner. Get out on Puget Sound, get out in some of our local rivers and some of our local lakes, and experience what we enjoy so much here in this neck of the woods.
And Tom, I want to dispel something that the naysayers say who don't want to go fishing and don't want to be crabbing, and they're worried about the commercial crabbers and the commercial netters and all this. Fishing in Puget Sound, I'll tell you what, in a urban area like ours, to have this kind of crabbing and this kind of Chinook fishing, I'm telling you what, you tell me it's not good.
It is.
You tell me, and the coho fishing is yet to come.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I know. And we get out.
I don't have any more room in my freezer for more fish. Puget Sound fishing is here, and it's alive. And it, you know, it just makes me feel good. It makes, and the sound is getting healthier all the time. It is. Compared to when you and I were kids, Tom.
No, I know. I
love to be living right now.
People like to complain a bit, but from the 206, the smaller 4.5 by 4.5 door with a tie, where can I get a new one? Harbor Marine has all that SMI BOMAC gear. John, you got some at your store too, and not tough, but just make sure you adequately weight it, put a long enough line on it, weight your float, get it out of the ferry lanes, and you're definitely going to catch some crab. All right, we're going to pop out of here. We got an absolute jam-packed hour 3. Our buddy Mark Uwasa from the Northwest Marine Trade Association is going to jump in, looking back at the Bellingham Salmon Derby, looking forward at the big one and the regional roundup. We got an open phone line and text segment. The Weldcraft Wheelhouse is going to have our old buddy John Kaiser with a Westport update, and he may be making a tuna run from tomorrow. Stay tuned. Jam-packed hour 3 right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Play ball!
This baseball season, Heritage Distilling Company proudly sponsors the bottom of the fifth. It's kind of like the seventh inning stretch. You stand up, stretch your legs, then head over for a new bottle of BSB, brown sugar bourbon. Because when you reach the bottom of the fifth, you need to be ready with a new bottle of BSB on deck. It's the seventh inning stretch with a smooth, sweet kick to it. You can't spell baseball without BSB.
Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of the bottom of the fifth and your Seattle Mariners.